Greetings, cinephiles. Are you looking for a movie analysis podcast that stands above the rest? Then look no further than Collateral Cinema, the only movie podcast that matters.
We analyze good movies, we analyze bad movies, and yes, we also analyze the in-betweens of the world of cinema.
So if you like what you hear, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And yes, my friends, we are 420 friendly. So when you listen to us,
smoke it if you've got it.
And now, here's a new episode of Collateral Gaming. The show starts right now.
I'm Ashley Chancellor.
And I'm Megan Gomez.
And this is Collateral Gaming.
Welcome back, friends, to Collateral Gaming, the only video game podcast that matters, as you've previously heard. So we're diving right back into it. We're going into The Witcher again, which I'm just so freaking enthralled about. Ash just finished the game, and I did a little bit more replay to just kind of get back into it, because it's like, you know, you're dipping your piggy dipping in the piggy pond.
You're dipping your dingle. Want to dip your dingle?
Piggy dipping in the piggy pond. yeah, because I'm dipping my toes in a bunch of different universes right now, so I need to get my shit straight.
Same here, actually.
For sure. I'm like in so many different fantasy things right now. I'm like, is there dragons in this one? No, okay, that's four things over. I'm played up on The Witcher just to get into it. I'm playing Horizon. I'm reading fucking Fourth Wing, and you know, we're watching all sorts of television. So I'm like, what universe am I immersing myself in? Which form of escapism am I choosing today? Oh, okay.
Exactly. Well, we are here for part two of The Witcher 3. In the last episode, we touched mainly on the gameplay. I think now we'll be able to get into the story because I just completed the main quest literally like an hour ago. So this is where we're going to be able to get into spoiler territory and really get into it with the characters, the plot, etc. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. And yes, my friends, we are a 420 friendly podcast. So whatever you have, smoke it if you've got it. Megan, Witcher 3, tell us a little bit about why you picked this game for this season. I don't know if we really got into it in the last part or not, but
yeah, I don't think we did, actually, which is funny. So I kind of picked The Witcher just because I know we've been talking a lot about like games that, you know, we would love to see live adaptations of. There is, of course, I'm sure y'all know, it's 2024 by now, so it's been a hot minute since all three seasons of The Witcher came out. There is three seasons of The Witcher on Netflix. There is books, which all of this is the source material from. I feel like we're kind of expanding our horizons a little bit, and we've been talking a lot about games with, you know, Bow and, you know, things that I felt like this was a good part to kind of bring this in, and I felt like it was good timing just because of where we've been at and trending wise for the podcast, and also just I have been wanting to talk about this shit for and I was like, you know what? I need to get some other picks out of the way. I was most anxious, I think, to do Horizon just because, like, that's my favorite game. But I had been holding this one and, like, gatekeeping the shit out of it. And I'm like, why am I like this? Why do I do this to myself? But I was just, I love the story of this. It's so immersive. It's obviously, you know, a lot of people will agree that this is one of the best RPGs of all time. People who've read the book said that it's some of the best book series they've read. A lot of people love, you know, Henry Cavill as Daddy Geralt in the series. There's a lot of good media for The Witcher, and it's just this huge universe. And the adaptations, like going from the books to the game, the game to the show, the game to the books, you know, all of that. And the show to the books, it's all a pretty relatively cohesive material. It's not like Marvel where we're skipping pages, right? Like there's a lot that's cohesive in this, and I love the cohesion, and it just makes my brain tingle. And I was like, you know what, Ash, it's fucking time. I'm playing the card. Let's fucking go. We're doing this. And you're like, I've never played it. I'm like, let's fucking go.
No, that's what I'm here for, and that's why I'm glad I have co-hosts on this podcast to recommend new games that I haven't played before. You know, like whenever you recommended Dead Space, I feel like that's something that pretty much every gamer should play, and I feel that way about The Witcher 3 even more so. I mean, this really actually sets the standard for open world game design. I think last part I said that it may very well be the best open world game design I've ever seen in a video game, or maybe tying with Tears of the Kingdom. I'm also going to throw Red Dead Redemption 2 up there in terms of really well done open world game design that doesn't feel empty, that, like, there's always shit to do. But, yeah, I mean, like, titles like those are really kind of what defines that. And what sets The Witcher 3 apart is that this game came out in 2015. It's almost 10 years old, and it holds up phenomenally well.
Which is wild. Wild.
Yeah. Absolutely wild. Compare that to something from 20 years ago, which we just talked about, Fable 1. Whatever they did in those 10 years blows my mind away, because this still feels like something that would come out today, if a little unpolished by today's standards.
Right. Yeah. I mean, enhance the graphics a little bit, dropping it in a different engine, and you have a complete game. Like, I think that's pretty much what they did with Unreal Engine 5 is they, you know, there is a re-release of this game. I believe I don't know if it's come out yet or if it's coming out on PC soon for Unreal Engine 5. I'm not entirely sure right now. But I do know, like, it's right there, that you just had to drop it into a new engine and that's it. Story's there. Characters are there. Everything's good to go. And it's for a game from 2015, I feel like it is very, very hefty. It is a corn-fed motherfucker of a game, right? Like, it is a boxy big game.
It is.
And that's not really... It's to put it in comparison for a game that we've talked about on the podcast that it's huge, right? You go back after the end and play through things. God of War, the first one of the Nordic type, was 3 years after this in development and in terms of timeline of games where we're at. And it still felt like it could have even been released then and, like, thrown punches, you know? Like, it, and I do believe it did win quite a number of accolades for the quality of the game, the story, the voice acting. You know, it's like, even if this were to come out like last year in 2023 in comparison with a huge game that we haven't talked about on the podcast because none of us have played it, but of course it's been all over social media, it's been talked about, Baldur's Gate 3, right? Like, I feel like this game, it's big enough to, it might not win against Baldur's Gate 3. There's a lot more, but it could throw punches with it for a couple rounds. You know what I mean?
If we're talking in terms of content, if this were released in 2023, 2024, you know, like, yeah, no, I think that this would absolutely, I mean, I believe it won Game of the year that it did come out in 2015, right?
I believe so. I want to say yes.
I'll look it up. But yeah, I think that this absolutely could stomp in terms of content alone. Now, obviously, you know, like I said, by modern standards, it does feel a little bit wonky. We touched on that before. And I found out that I think a big part of that was that the game was originally much more realistic in terms of the way that Geralt handled. But in a sense that, like...
Right.
Realism doesn't always make for good gameplay, but there was sort of kind of a weight. And, and so if you turn on the standard movement style, you can actually experience what the game was originally. And then it made more sense that the way he moved just always felt a little bit off to me. Well, because what they did with one of the more recent patches of the game, I think from the one just a couple years ago that added new next-gen support, but what they did was they added this alternative movement style that's actually set as the default that is a little bit closer to the way an action RPG would handle or any, you know, video game for that matter. So what they did was they kind of struck kind of a compromise between the two, and so that Geralt could be a little bit more snappy in his movements. And I tried out both, and while there is something kind of interesting about the way that he feels a little bit more weighty in the standard style, I think the alternative is the way to go if you just want to be able to, you know, participate in combat or walk through doorways without difficulty.
because Geralt is such a big personality.
I'm running into people through the streets of Novigrad as it is, so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and, you know, since we're finally getting into the story a little bit, I just love how, like, simple this fucking man is. But yet he gets thrown the most complicated fucking shit all the time.
You know, and for somebody who's supposedly political, he really gets embroiled in a lot of politics. In fact, there are some options that I think feel very out of character for Geralt. Should you take them?
Right. Yeah. No. Really. This game makes me laugh.
Yeah, no, for real. For instance, siding with Dijkstra at the end of Reason of State, which is the quest where you assassinate Radovid. At the very end, Dijkstra, who up to this point I thought was a fantastic character. I love the fuck out of this guy and just his like dry wit and everything. Despite the fact that he and Geralt are always bickering, you know, he was kind of shipping Geralt and Triss, which was funny. And, you know, I just thought he was a fun guy. But at the very end of the quest, he decides to kill my homies, Roche, who I think is from previous Witcher games, and Vess. And those guys supported me. They had my back at Kaer Morhen. So, like, I wasn't about to let those guys get killed. I mean, you know what I mean? They put their life on the line for me. And I'm like, I just cannot see the person that I've come to know Geralt as in this game and in the lore making any other choice.
Right. No, I agree 100%. And it's kind of interesting how the player gets to know Geralt and how you start to think like Geralt when you play this game. And I guess that's this game's version of the escapism, is you really are becoming Geralt and you're thinking in the way that he would, which is kind of a strategized, logical. He tries his best not to have emotions, I feel like. You know, and then of course he falls in love and gets a kid and everything else. But, you know, it's like he does his best to think with logic and then never ends up working with logic. He always ends up playing with emotion. And I love that about Geralt. I think that's one of his most, I feel like, looked down upon qualities. But to me, it's one of his most redeemable qualities, because he really is such a logical person at heart, but also has the biggest heart. And he's such a caring, loving person. He just doesn't want to fucking admit that he's a big old softy.
This is true. And what I like about this game is that it does something a little interesting for an open world action RPG. It doesn't allow you to create your own character. It doesn't deal with, you know, plain good and evil morality systems like Fable or even the freedom that Skyrim or the Elder Scrolls games in general present. But instead, it gives you the opportunity to roleplay as Geralt. You're not you, you are Geralt. And you need to think about how Geralt thinks. Now, hey, this may be your introduction to this character and to this world. So you can kind of roleplay Geralt with a little bit of freedom, but at the end of the day,
not that much freedom.
I think you get aspects of his personality, and there are things that are that make sense to you.
Regardless,
The impression that, you know, I was able to get of Geralt very early on is that, you know, he abides by a sort of code, which is somewhat of a combination between the Witcher code and his own moral code that he adheres to. Because we see the way that other Witchers like Lambert handle situations, and it's different. Geralt has, in many ways, his own personal Witcher code. When possible, he prefers to stay out of matters. But at the end of the day, if he sees somebody in trouble, I feel like he feels the need to intervene.
Absolutely. And I feel like that kind of ties into what I was saying. You know, he's like, I shouldn't meddle. I shouldn't meddle. Fuck. You know, he's just, he can't help himself. He really can't.
And of course, you do get some freedom as far as the way that you pursue other, you know, the subplots like romance. You know, if you played Witcher 1 and 2, you might be inclined to romance Triss, who is the character from those games. But if you've watched the series or read the books, you might be tempted to
go for Yennefer.
Yeah. But the game isn't very clear at times you know, as far as what's available to you and then the consequences of your choices. So you can 100% try to romance both, not realizing, you know, that whenever you went after Triss later, you were going to have an opportunity to go and after Yennefer and royally fuck yourself over at the end.
Right. You can do that 100%. Who did you end up picking?
Yennefer.
I love that for you.
All the way, Yennefer. And, you know, I had some foresight. I, you know, the game has been out for as long as it has, and I was already warned, you know, don't try to romance both characters or it won't end well. And I'd played Persona 5. That game also punishes you if you try to take the harem route.
If you try to take the harem route, like, why can't I fuck them both at the same time? I don't care.
Right? Like, why can't this be an isekai and I can just be the protagonist coon who gets his harem of girls?
I just want to be the fantasy version of pucking around. Leave me alone, guys. Like,
well, you know, The Witcher 3 provides Geralt quite a few opportunities to fuck. Apparently, not all of which actually affect your relationship with Triss or Yennefer. Yeah. I think the only consequences are if you romance both of them.
Yeah, because they're the two main, like, women, you know.
But Geralt can fuck around. Geralt can hire a whore if he wants.
Yeah.
He can do whatever you want. I mean, I had to do it once because it was an option in the game. And after that, I turned down Kira Metz because, you know, I was already set out on my heart for Yennefer. I turned down Sasha, the Gwent player, who was a bitch to take down.
Oh yeah, that's true. I think I fucked her my last nice playthrough. I mean, why not?
By the way, Gwent, holy fuck, the mini game that Gwent. some argue is even better than the main game.
I love Gwent. It's so fun for me, and I know this is kind of weird, but I guess, like, the way that my brain has thought about Gwent since I've become an adult and played this game, and since my prefrontal cortex has finished developing, is it's like it's night and day to Strike on Horizon. Like, I cannot get into fucking Strike on Horizon, but for some reason Gwent, I'm like, let's fucking go, let's go. You want to play some goddamn Gwent? Let's play some Gwent. Let's
dude
go.
I feel that way about Gwent. I also feel that way about Queen's Blood in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Yes. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has a card game mini game in its open world. So, and it also bangs. But God, Gwent is such a blast, and I think what's cool about it is that, you know, some decks are just completely broken. Some of the cards in this are completely broken. Like, I think whenever they spun out and did the Gwent standalone game, they basically overhauled the entire thing. Because, I mean, it, you know, at its core, this is an open-world action RPG, so there need to be cards that can break the game that if you put in enough effort, you can get.
Yeah.
So, or usually for sure, yeah, performing well against other NPCs. So I beat Sasha in the high-stakes quest, who I have heard is the most difficult Gwent player in the game, so it's all downhill from here.
He is. Yeah, no, she's hard. I had to redo that a couple of times. Yeah, man, that's not fucking easy.
I think it really becomes like a much easier if you're able to assemble a deck like hers. Like, get a Nilfgaard set with a bunch of spies and decoys, and you basically can never lose.
I mean, that's true. Yeah, I think that was always kind of my downfall, is I didn't have as many spies in my deck as I feel like I wanted.
The spies are the game breakers, but if you have decoys, you can capture the enemy spies. And
yeah, no, I feel like I always had more decoys, and I don't know why. Spies just never, I just never fucking had. I don't know why. I made it hard on myself. That's why. I just wanted to. That was just something I naturally wanted to do. It's fine.
But yeah, Gwent is honestly addictive. It is a lot of fun. You can honestly pour hours and hours into just Gwent. And in fact, they made a Gwent standalone game, so there you go. And I love that you can basically...
Didn't they make an actual card game too? Like an actual card one that you can play?
I'm sure they have. I'd be very surprised if they didn't.
I think they did.
I feel like they did too. I feel like I've seen that somewhere. Yeah.
Let me see. I'm going to look.
By the way, Gwent is apparently a reference to a game in the books, which was translated as Beryl.
Yes.
But yes. Apparently, according to the lore, it should play similar to Bridge. They kind of just went balls to the wall here and just, you know, you have like actual in-game characters as cards. You know, you can get the Geralt and the Ciri cards pretty easily, actually, just by playing in the Gwent-related side quests.
You can play it on iOS, guys.
On iOS? Yep. I have the app.
Yeah.
And I have not actually played it yet. But I downloaded it because I was like, fuck yeah, Gwent. So I expect it's going to be a lot more complicated than the in-game Gwent. But due to the massive overhaul and, you know, how many years in between. Something I was impressed by was how well this game was updated up to now. I mean, like I said, I think at least just a couple of years ago, they added the next-gen update. And, you know, so, like, this game was continuing to receive support. And unlike other long-running games like GTA 5, doesn't release a whole new-ass version of the game on the next-gen console, but just offers it as a free patch. So kudos to you, Witcher 3, for doing that. And for your paid content being, I've heard, are, you know, rivals the main game content, and I can't wait to get into the DLC quests.
Yeah, you know, I feel like if you're going to play extra money for something, you know, that sometimes it's like the actual completion of a game, sometimes it's like that missing piece that you feel that you need. You know, for like, I know I'm calling back to Horizon, it's because I've been playing it, so it's on my mind. But I can also like reference like Skyrim, you know, like the house building, or, you know, like the being able to adopt children, like that's kind of the fulfillment that some players get. And that's, you know, that's usually in the full all exclusive version now. I mean, there's so many fucking versions of the game out now. But for like Horizon, like I almost said Forbidden Wilds. Frozen Wilds DLC. Holy shit. Frozen Wilds DLC. I feel like that kind of makes the game 100% complete. I'm trying to think of other games too. But I just can't off the top of my head, and I don't know why, but I feel like, you know, even though it is a paid content, it makes the game feel complete, like 100% whole, like they've given their all, they've done it all, they said this is the cards we have on the table, no pun intended, which by the way, I just looked it up, guys, and there is a actual Gwent case and board game and all 526 cards that you can purchase on Etsy for $84.99.
Badass.
Just so you know, if you want something to add to your players, the your little yeah. What would you even call that? I would say like trinkets.
Yeah, you sent this to me. This is pretty badass.
I did. I sent it to you.
I mean, it's like for this whole whole set though, it's like $85. Huh.
And it's everything.
But yeah, I mean, the as far as the DLC goes, I mean, paid content isn't a bad thing as long as it's a genuine expansion. And some games in recent memory have done that well. If you're genuinely expanding the game and you're offering content that is on par with that of the main game, and then you're offering a lot of it for a reasonable price, then yeah, absolutely. It lengthens the life of the game. It engages the players more, you know, and people are willing...
Yeah, you get a re-engagement of it.
Yeah, people are willing to hop in and check the game out more and wait longer for the next one. And I know CD Projekt Red is working on Witcher 4. They've mentioned that. But there hasn't been any like official announcements other than the fact that they're working on it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like it's kind of, we'll get a Witcher 4 when we get an Elder Scrolls kind of thing.
I honestly feel like they could go with a new protagonist. But I think I saw somewhere that they are going with Geralt. I'm not sure. But I feel like this game does conclude Geralt's storyline pretty well, and I would like to see, you know, kind of a new game set with Ciri as the protagonist, especially if you got The Witcher in for her like I did.
Oh, absolutely. If you don't, you're wrong. I'm kidding. I'm joking. That's a joke. I'm sorry.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the canon ending.
That's a canonical ending. I mean, if you think about Ciri as a person, like, she's always meant to become a Witcher. Like, it's her, like, you look through all of the things that lead up to her and Geralt being together. And it's like she's always meant to be with the Witcher, and she's always meant to be a Witcher. So
also, her gameplay is so fucking fun. She just gets to just blitz around. Like, God, I could get used to that. And, you know, like, I mentioned before that with Geralt, I really invested heavily into signs. But with Ciri, you know, you kind of just have a play style set for her chapters.
Yeah.
And I like that even after the end of Act 1, where you finally reunite with her, they still pepper those throughout the game and kind of have them working together throughout most of the main quests, which is cool. And they keep upgrading her moveset so that, you know, she gets even more powerful and more powerful. And at the end, I think she gets that, like, Elder Blood upgrade. And, like, she just fucking just tears enemies apart. Like, they're just, like...
Yeah.
That was so fun. So I don't know if they could find a way to, like, realistically, like, ground her a little bit and let you, like, you know, level up and you know, optimize that for the action RPG experience. But then, you know, you could just set the game in a new world and just, you know, just go from there. Just start with the base level being, you know, her absolute overpowered shit.
Yeah, you know, I feel like that would be a really good concept for the next game, which, by the way, guys, if you hear Alan saying daddy and stuff in the background, he is gaming with one of his buddies on COD. They are gay as shit. It's fine.
Yeah, as all men do,
welcome to a marriage and a household of gaming. Yeah, no. Alan has, like, 15 boyfriends. He's it's fine. So, yeah, this is a podcasting and married gamers in essence. But I feel like that would be such a cool concept. Would be like Ciri being so overpowered, and like, you know, you kind of see her a little bit with Geralt, but like after the conclusion of his story, you know, like you can check in with Geralt, but it's kind of like Aloy talking about Rost and Horizon. I know I keep bringing up Horizon, guys. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to make comparisons here. I'm really good with comparisons if I have one set out. You know, like check in with something like that from time to time, like check in on Geralt, but like Ciri come into her power and maybe learn a little bit better about using it and getting more comfortable with it, and like still of course being, you know, the fucking corn-fed fucking I'm a fucking fuck you up Ciri that she is, but like learning different like attributes of her power, you know, learning what it is to be a Witcher, being a female Witcher, what her experience is of being a Witcher, and like doing the things like, you know, like what would Geralt do, but wait, I'm Ciri, I need my own story, but like trying to be like Geralt but then herself, you know. I don't know if any of that just made sense because I just word vomited, but it was a train of thought that I let out into the microphone.
I don't know what they could do because, like I said, I mean, technically that really only works if you take the Witcher ending, and so they'd be making one of the endings canonical. But then again, that may be the best thing to do.
I mean, they're kind of doing the same with Mass Effect, so, yeah.
I know, like, the way this game handled canonicity for the past few games, being that they were inaccessible to most of its audience, was they just have you pre-select the options in the beginning. So whenever, I remember being like overwhelmed by the choice at first, and I was like, wait, what? Like when I first start the game, it asks me a few things like, okay.
Oh yeah.
Like, what do you want to do? Do you want to import data from The Witcher 2 and blah, blah, blah? And I was like, oh, okay. So, but what happens is after you complete the prologue, once you get to Vizima, you're asked a bunch of questions, and you can basically pick what, you know, whatever outcomes you wanted from Witcher 2. And I thought the best thing to do was to just spare everybody. That way you'd have the most quests or help with quests available to you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I looked things up very briefly to get a sense of what some of these decisions meant, but it's not something to stress over. It just opens up maybe a quest or two, depending on what you pick, or in like one particular side quest, something might be easier and you might not have to go to as much trouble because you left this character alive or whatever.
Yeah, instead of just fucking slaughtering everybody because there is somebody that's renegade as fuck out there like that.
I'm really excited about like jumping into the next playthrough and trying out like all of the different options and seeing how that affects the world, you know?
Yes, that is something that I think about all the time because I know we've kind of talked about this in a couple of episodes where, like, I feel like I'm always so scared to, like, get through the beginning of a game and, like, get through my first playthrough of a game for the first time. Like, that's always such a hard thing for me because I love the exhilaration and the escapism and just, like, the wonder that I get of playing a game for the first time. But I feel like I need to start leaning more into getting into playing a game again and being like a repeater and being able to pick different story choices for different games, because I'm so fucking bad about that. I really am.
I get it.
I don't finish it.
Well, this game is tough too, because it, you know, as mentioned previously, it gives you a lot of difficult decisions to make. Some that, I don't know, man, let me just go outside. Let me walk around for a bit. Let me ponder. The fact that side quests in this game make you do that. I mean, because when you get down to it, as far as the gameplay goes, I mean, the quests are pretty much generic RPG stuff. You know, you
right.
fetch quests, fight enemies, investigate the murder scene using your Witcher senses. Most of it's all pretty much the same. But every single quest has, or almost every single quest has just this deep philosophical questions attached to it. Like, you know, like, did I really make the right decision? There was a quest in the goddamn prologue that really made me wonder if I did the right thing, you know? And I found myself frequently, you know, making choices and then pausing the game and looking it up to go see if, like, the choice I made was a good choice or not. And sometimes reloading.
Yes. Yes, I did that so much. Because it's, man, it's hard. And I also feel like that's one of the great things about this game is every single NPC, down, like, from the big, every character, from Geralt all the way down to the tiny NPCs that you go get a fucking newspaper for, right, are thought out and have their own story and their own narrative and their own place in this universe. They're not just like, hey, thanks. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not just swaying there. You know, like a lot of these games, and it doesn't feel repetitive.
Thank you. Thank you, Master Witcher.
Thank you, yeah.
You know, I love how, like, you have a lot of, like, the NPCs in Velen that start out as, like, racists, and then over, like, as you complete a few of their objectives, a lot of them are like, oh, thank you, Master Witcher. I had the wrong idea about you, and, you know, you kind of just influence people a little bit. I mean, in any option that the game gave me to not accept a reward, at least early on, I always picked that. But then later on, you get to Skellige, and, like, I refused the reward to this woman, and she looked offended by it. So I reloaded, and I took the payment the next time.
I don't know why, but that made me think of the one where it's the lady looking for her fucking frying pan.
Yes.
And he's like, fascinating. Are you getting near the end? That's so fascinating. Are you getting to the end? Like, y'all, if there is anything that I can tell you that will convince you to play this fucking game, it's just Geralt's one-off lines.
Lambert, what a prick.
Lambert, what a prick.
What does he say? He's like, I didn't know you were a poet. Sure. Lambert, what a prick.
Yeah, or he's just like, when telling. Thanks.
And I think Lambert quickly replies, not bad.
Yeah.
Because that's just the relationship they
have. Something like that.
Lambert is actually great. I love him. There's an option whenever, you know, you're spending the night with him and you're drunk, and you could just be like, I love you, man. Drunk Geralt is the fucking best.
I love Drunk Geralt. Drunk Geralt is great.
Drunk Geralt also, is my spirit animal.
I know that it's... You need to put that on a button and wear that on your fucking lanyard for Drunk Geralt is my spirit animal. No, you know what? I just have to bring this up because I was talking about other media. There is nothing that will quite compare to the bathtub scene. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I mean, it's great seeing Henry fucking Cavill do it, because the things that would let that man do to me. But, you know.
Same, honestly. This game opens up with a bathtub scene in Kaer Morhen, yes. Which is apparently a dream sequence, but it might be a flashback. It kind of had to. I think it just kind of set a precedent for that. And honestly, The Witcher 3 brought The Witcher into the mainstream. So I'm glad to see like references that the TV show makes to it.
Yes. Well, I feel like there's another fun factoid that I should share because I am, you know, obviously enamored by this series. Is not only did Henry Cavill, before he signed on to the role, like somebody, he had heard that somebody was making a script and he was like, you are not doing this shit unless I am fucking Geralt of Rivia. Love that. Love that, first off. But he not only, read the books. He's read all of the books. He also played all of the games, and he's a huge fan of the game. Like, he has replayed this game like 7, 9, 10 times. Kind of shit. Like, he is in love with this character, loves this. Like, I don't know. And there's a lot of speculation as to why he left the show. I don't know that Miley Cyrus's ex-husband is a good fucking pick for the next Geralt. I don't think they should continue. I think they should leave it at 3 seasons, 3 games, be done with it. Yeah, I feel like there's no other Geralt. He is just fucking iconic. And the fact that he is so dedicated to it was just amazing for me. And another reason why I wanted to talk about it, because I wanted to talk a little bit how incredible the story is that it was adapted in 3 different media, and it's incredible in all 3 of them. That's my personal opinion. A lot of people don't like the show, but that's on y'all. I fucking... anything that involves fantasy and anything that I can consume and have a form of escapism, I'm probably going to like it. If I don't like it, really fucking bad. I will find redeeming qualities in pretty much anything.
It's a good outlook to have. And I mentioned this last time, but I thought it was cool to be able to encounter characters in the game. And then, you know, I'd go and see their background in the show and kind of understand. And the game provides a lot of context. I mean, there's a whole info book with information for every character. So anytime you meet anybody new and it's obvious that they already know Geralt and have done shit together, you can always look at a glance, and there's dialogue options in game that will also offer you the option for background information if you need it. So the game does a good job of being standalone and providing all the context that it needs for his characters, but it was also cool to go back and see firsthand those events and also see where things actually differ, because I think the show kills off Eskel once they get to Kaer Morhen, whereas he's alive and well here in the games years later. So obviously there's going to be some differences, and vice versa. Like, I'd see a character in the show, and then as I started playing through the game, it was really cool actually playing and watching these side by side. You know, I'd meet that character later and I'd be like, oh, okay. So like, they portrayed them a little bit differently, but like, you know, I can see that this is the same character.
Yeah, it's almost like an alternative universe kind of thing. Like, it's still at the core the same character, right? But you can see a bit of them in every adaptation that there is. There's no real difference. There's no major difference. Like, you could tell who they are in game, in movie, and book, and it's still all the same person, but like, maybe just a little bit different, as if they had made like a little bit slight different choice in their life and came out just a little bit tiny different, like the butterfly effect kind of thing.
Or, you know, you're just looking at them later in life, like with Ciri, for instance.
Right.
Who's like a full-grown adult now. And I wanted to touch on that. I know we brought it up earlier, but her relationship with Geralt is honestly like, God, I think it made me tear up whenever they actually had their reunion. And I think it flashes back to their original meeting. And then they embrace, and it's just so sweet.
Yes, it is. And you know, if you're a reader, you'll understand this, and I feel like you might even understand this being a gamer. The found family trope always fucking gets me, because I feel like I have a lot of like family members that way. My brother, included, you know, I have a lot of family members that I, you know, they're not blood to me, but I found them. And I see a lot of that, and a lot of that love and compassion in Ciri and Geralt's relationship, and the way that they like embrace each other and just love each other is just so endearing and so sweet. Like, me personally, I cried like a little fucking bitch, but I also just, I'm a woman and I cry at cute things. Okay, don't judge me.
Also, it surprised me how much Geralt lifts his guard around here. I don't think he does that with anyone else, Yen and Triss included.
No.
Like, he was almost, like, it surprised me how openly affectionate he was with Ciri whenever he met her. And I know that this is after years of development in the books and whatnot, but I just saw this completely other side to Geralt that he hides in front of most characters, or at least partially hides, you know, in every other instance in the game. And he just becomes almost a different person with her. And honestly, like, I couldn't refuse a single one of her requests. I believe after that point, like, what there's a few time choices that you have to make that will affect the ending that you get. Whether she ends up as a Witcher, whether she ends up as the Empress of Nilfgaard, which I erroneously referred to as Niflgaard in the last episode. I apologize about that.
Niflgaard. It's fine.
or she can disappear, you know, presumed dead. So,
right.
And I'm glad I got the Witcher ending, honestly. I'm so happy that I got that. And that was just honestly the natural choices I made in the game. I noticed that, you know, I kind of wanted to support her. I wanted to cheer her up, you know?
Yes, because Ciri doubts herself, because she's always been thought to be, you know, just like someone that she feels she needs to be and not who she wants to be. Like, a lot of people try and influence her decisions, and I feel like Geralt is not one of those people. Like, he's the one who's like, be who you want to be. And I feel like that's like the most natural choice for a lot of people, because a lot of us seek encouragement and things like that in our own natural lives. So when we go into a form of escapism where we can support somebody else, it's a natural thing for us to do, right? But also, I feel like Geralt sees who she really is, and I feel like Ciri sees through that kind of guard that you were talking about. And I feel like she comes into herself so much becoming a Witcher, because she really, and he shows her what she's capable of. He's like, you're fucking capable of this shit. Like, stop fucking playing yourself and be so fucking for real right now. You're not made to be an empress. You're not made to sit on the throne. You're made to be a fucking Witcher. And some people may disagree because of the choices that they made in their game. That's fine. But me personally, I agree with that as well. And I mean, that's also what the show shows, and I personally haven't read the books. It is on my physical TBR, because I definitely want to read that. Oh my god, I need to read it. I think there's, what, like 8 books in the series? I need to do that. I need to start on that. But yeah, I feel like that's just the most natural thing for her to do.
Yeah, the positive decisions in a lot of cases were ones, I think, where Geralt let her make her own choice and let her do things on her own. And this was easy to guess, though, because there are context clues. Ciri doesn't like to be protected. She wants to take care of herself. She wants to be responsible for herself. And oh my god, Ciri is reacting to me on my phone. This is going to be a problem.
It's fine. It's fine. Everything is fine.
She just jumped on because I said her name. Cirilla is a great character. Honestly, she's a hottie as an adult. Oh my god.
Yes, absolutely.
Like,
I'd fuck her.
Oh yeah. And also, you get the option at one point in the game to say, like, I prefer girls. So I absolutely picked that option. And then I tried to kiss the guy anyway. Because I was like, fuck it. Let this guy have, like, his, like, moment.
Let her be a bicon. That's fine.
Exactly.
I'm totally fine with that.
She is a bicon, actually, because the game presents romantic options for her, for both genders. So canonically, she's bisexual.
She's bi. I love that for her.
I like.
That's great.
I also like that they did that with Dandelion/Yaskier in the Netflix series. They made him bisexual, which actually fits with his character quite a bit.
He's very effervescent, yeah.
Judging by the context of the game, though, in the game universe, I think he's straight, because every single one of the past lovers that you have to talk to in his side quest are all women. And so I think in the game universe, Dandelion is straight, but I could totally see him as bi. Like, that actually works for him.
Yeah, no, I definitely see it too. It's not something as far off, which is something that still fucks me up because like I've been watching the Netflix series for so long that like I'm like, why do they keep calling him Yaskier? And then I'm like, Yaskier, Dan Yaskielion.
I ended up looking it up, or in some way or another, I found out, and I was like, oh, okay, so he's that's okay. Dandelion is Yaskier, and Dandelion is also the narrator. I know a lot of people thought it was Vesemir, but it's actually it's Dandelion, and he refers to himself as, you know, the bard Dandelion. But he has like a completely different voice in the narration than he does in game. It's honestly kind of a little bit of a shock there, because I think it might be the same voice actor. He's just trying to do like an older sounding version of himself.
Or I was going to say, I think it's in a retrospective sense.
Or because he's telling a story like as a bard, so he's doing his bard voice, and he's a lot older.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because we know, like the Witcher books, Dandelion is narrating the game in the future, referencing events that happened in the past. And what's really cool is if you go through like the quest logs, you can see like little bits of the future, you know, peppered in there, and like you'd find out what may where characters may end up later in life after The Witcher 3.
By order of the Emperor of Nilfgaard, for the murder of the wounded, looting, cannibalism, you are hereby sentenced to death by hanging. Or torment. No! Don't meddle. Take the reward and let's go.
Help me!
Knew you witches wouldn't scorn imperial gold. Tough hunt.
Tougher than yours, that's certain. Evil is evil. Lesser, greater, middling. Makes no difference.
Come fit me!
Bring her down. Do it my way.
You like that, you bitch?
Get the hammer.
Kick her teeth in.
The degree is arbitrary. The definition's blurred. If I'm to choose between one evil and another, I'd rather not choose at all.
Just make it quick, Geralt.
What the?
Close your eyes.
Hit him! What are you doing?
Killing monsters.
I love that they put that much thought into the quest names and things like that too. Like I just, it's like the ingenuity of these developers. Like CD Projekt Red has always been like a great one for me, but like coming back and just thinking about like The Witcher 3, not even the other two, excuse me, just The Witcher 3. The amount of thought that they put into every single little thing and adding these little minute details and tidbits and little things that reference the games and things like that. It's just, it's so heartwarming and it's so nice to see. I always have a love for developers. I love that they are always, you know, producing games for us. They're breaking their backs for us. They're doing all of these things to make sure that we get content and we have a form of escapism and that this is their livelihood, right, is giving us entertainment. But I really appreciate a developer that thinks of every single little possible thing they can down to the blades of grass and the thoughts in a person's head. Because it's reality. And they try, and I feel like that's another great thing about this game and another great thing about CD Projekt Red in general is they make it as realistic as possible, as if this person actually existed in a space and time parallel to ours somewhere.
Yeah. speaking of parallel worlds, did you know there's a reference to Cyberpunk in this game in 2015?
No.
The game had already been announced, I think, in 2013. So it was it was a small little Easter egg, but Siri mentions traveling to other worlds. And when she first mentioned it, she said something about metal in their heads and flying things. And at first, I wondered if maybe she might be talking about the real world, but that didn't quite fit. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, that's a reference to Cyberpunk.
That is so cool. I didn't know that. I love when games do that too, because, like, you know, there's God of War references both Spider-Man and Horizon, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know God of War. Yeah, God of War referenced Horizon for sure. The Last of Us.
The Last of Us, the Cordyceps, yeah.
Oh, The Witcher 3 also has a reference to Jango Fett. There's a character who's a bounty hunter named Jango Fett.
Yes, Jango Fett, yes, yes. And I believe that comes from one of the main devs who's like a huge Star Wars nerd. And I think went on to work on Jedi.
Weird that they chose Jango and not Boba, though.
Because Jango is the original. I mean, if you're a fan of the original movies, that's kind of, you know.
If you're a fan of the originals, it would be Boba.
Yeah.
But because Boba was the one in the original trilogy, but Jango is the one in, you know, is technically the original in universe. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's his father. So
I think that there were actually more pop culture references too that I picked up on while I was playing this. But yeah, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. One thing I did want to touch on this episode, as far as the story is concerned, is it's actually a fairly early story beat. But the Bloody Baron side quest in Velen, that one is
okay.
Well, because that one, there are so many interesting ramifications based on decisions that you make at the beginning or in the middle of the quest. Your first playthrough, what ended up happening with all of that, with Crookback Bog, with the Baron?
Fuck. I don't even remember. Actually, I'm trying to think. It's actually considered a main quest.
Yeah,
it's not a side quest. It's a main quest.
It's technically a main quest, right? But you don't actually have to complete it. You can technically, like, you clear your requirement as far as the finding Ciri part goes on pretty early on in that quest, and then, you know, it's up to you to finish it. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it is categorized as a main quest.
I think, were you allowed in?
Allowed in where? Into the castle?
Into the castle.
I had to sneak in there because I got into another bloody fight right after the White Orchard incident. I guess I didn't learn the first time, and I got myself into another scuffle and wasn't allowed entry. But the one of the major ramifications actually comes early on, and it appears to be unrelated. If you decide to go after the Crookback Bog part of the quest first, there's a decision to either kill or release an evil spirit or do nothing, and you're also at odds with the crones and what the crones want you to do. I ended up releasing the thing. I have to admit, I didn't look up like the full ramifications of what would happen, but I did look up, you know, like a little bit of information about it. And I was like, you know, they said, if you pick this, then, you know, just a village that worships the crones get destroyed and a few other characters die, you know, but if you pick this, then the kids die. And I was like, oh no, fuck this village worshiping the crones. I don't care about them. And if it's just a few other people, whatever. Well, it turns out those people end up being the Baron and his wife, who you didn't realize is his wife at the time. But I still don't feel bad because fuck the Baron, honestly.
Yeah.
He hung himself at the end of his quest line, and like, I get why some people feel a little bit torn over that. I didn't, because I know that they do give him a little bit of humanity. And one of the things that The Witcher 3 does really well is it is very realistically portraying humanity here. Here's a character who's a vile person, you know, abused his wife and daughter, you know, drove them away. and you know, basically got what was deserved. But at the same time, he is very pleasant towards Ciri and Geralt, actually. Like, he welcomes Ciri into her home along with the little girl that she was with, you know, gives the little girl a place to live, gives Ciri, you know, supplies and sets her off on her journey, you know. So there are elements of him being a somewhat decent person.
Decent
underneath
person, yeah.
Very serious issues.
I think that's why it was kind of hard for a lot of players, is because, like, he hangs himself and it's like, well, he was helpful at one point. I feel like that was something that maybe he struggled with as a person, was, like, being a decent human. You know, like, he definitely, it seems like, you know, somebody coming from somebody who's got some mental issues, as if we all don't in this day and age, we're in our own Great Depression functioning with meds. I feel like that is, like, one of the things that is hard, is I feel like he was battling his own demons and taking it out on people when he shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But obviously you're in an ancient medieval time. There's no fucking therapist besides, like, maybe Dandelion.
Well, like I said before, there are no clear good and evil choices. It's not black and white. Everything in The Witcher is relatively morally gray. And I think one of the tough things about that side quest is that it has consequences that aren't immediately
foreseeable.
Foreseeable, yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, it's like you really don't know what the consequences are of your actions until later. Unless, you know, like I said, the internet's there. You can look everything up. I tried to avoid that. But sometimes during, like, when I'd made a difficult decision and I wasn't really sure if I had made the right one, sometimes I'd look at, like, immediate consequences, you know, and usually I let myself make the decision first. And sometimes I stuck to decisions that I made, even if they weren't necessarily the ones that had the best consequences later on, just because, you know, I was like, you know what? I stand by it, though. I feel like that's the decision Geralt would have made.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, there's some where I'm like, well, I feel like Geralt would have done this, but I don't fucking know. But I guess we'll see, you know?
But I can see somebody taking the fun out of this by just, like, looking everything up before they made a decision. And I would definitely caution away from that.
I did that in my last playthrough because I couldn't fucking remember. And I was like, yeah.
Well, if you've played through the game already, then, you know, whatever. But, like, that first playthrough, you know, like, I think a big part of it is fucking up. Thankfully, I don't think I really had any, well, besides the Bloody Baron, which I didn't really mind. But
I was
going to
say
any,
besides the Baron.
Yeah, I didn't really have any big, you know, decisions I felt like that I was just... there were none at all that I think I was displeased with later on that I was like, that were like major ones, you know. Like I said, the most major difficult choice that I made was the one that ended up with the Baron being dead. But like I said, I wasn't broken up about it. That guy was a scumbag. The wife is unfortunate. The daughter joins the Eternal Flame, and fuck the Eternal Flame. I hope she learns better someday. But, you know,
I
still stand by that decision because, like, you know, the kids. Like, you know, I saved the kids.
Yeah.
Fuck that village of crone worshippers. Like, I don't care about them.
Jesus Christ. Like, you're like, fuck it. I don't give a shit, man.
you're worshiping the crones. Like, I don't know. I don't care. And like, but yeah, I mean, there are a lot of difficult decisions and things, you know. Sometimes there is no right choice. There's no choice that's going to make you feel good in the end. Like, I did the right thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like this game is about as gray as Geralt's hair is fucking silver. So,
all over the game. Like I said, just peppered in, like, these tiny little side quests. So I had an issue. I don't know if I maybe might have did something a little bit wrong, but I found myself over-leveled a little bit as I got into the mid-game, which made everything much easier. Like, like the final boss fight, for instance, like, no difficulty. Like, yeah, he was a sponge. He took a lot of hits, but I felt like the fight preceding that one, the boss battle preceding that one against Calanthir, was more difficult than Aridin.
Calanthir fucked me up, and I feel like that one was the one that just kind of was like, it made me a little apprehensive. But circling back about the decisions, I was thinking about it while you were talking, and I think the thing that really gets me is, like, the decision-based things in this game makes me think about Mass Effect. And you have to make the right decisions in Mass Effect or your fucking squad mates die.
Yeah.
And that is like a PTSD for me that transcends into every game since, where I have to look things up to make sure that I don't form a bond in my form of escapism with these fucking people and then they die.
Oh, you would have a ballpark with Danganronpa then. And Danganronpa, I would recommend not looking anything up. And Danganronpa, I don't know if you know like the premise of that, but it's basically like Battle Royale meets Ace Attorney. You have a bunch of kids, high school kids, that are stuck in this high school, and they're imprisoned there, basically. Like, the doors are and the windows are all bolted, and they're told that the only way to escape is by killing one of the other students and getting away with it. So when a murder occurs, the whole class has a trial, and you have to figure out who the killer is. And so if the class votes on the killer and they get it right, then just the killer gets punished, which means executed brutally. But you know, if they get the wrong culprit, then the killer, everybody else dies, and the killer gets to go free. Well, anyway, you start with 15 high school students.
It's like Among Us.
Yeah.
So it's Among Us with high school students, and you're not blaming your friends, you're blaming students.
Well, they're your friends because there's just 15 of you starting on, and the game also has a social sim aspect to it, much like Persona, where, you know, in between class trials, you're just talking to other students and building up relationships and learning more about them, because every one of them has like their own subplot, but not knowing whether the next day one of them might end up getting killed or be the killer themselves.
I couldn't do that. That would make me bawl my fucking eyes out like a little bitch.
Yeah,
I can't do that, because like, when characters die, dude, it gets me every time. It gets me every fucking time.
Yeah, well, you know, there is at least like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 murders per game. I mean, that was just the premise of the first game. They go on from there to different locations and different premises, but it's a crazy game series, and like, you never quite know, you know, hey, I'm increasing my bond with this person, and we're getting, you know, but, you know, not only might they be killed the next day, but they could also be somebody that actually killed one of your friends and was willing to let everybody else die, you know, in order to get away. Like, you know, it sometimes they're sympathetic, and sometimes you find out, no, this person's actually just a piece of shit, or they're crazy.
Oh my god. I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could handle that. I don't.
Getting back on track. The Witcher 3 does face you with similar moral quandaries, you know, like, you're never quite sure whether you should take this action or take that one action. Sometimes I feel like my choice is pretty clear, the one that I would make as the version of Geralt that I'm playing, so to speak.
Right.
But then sometimes I'm really not sure of that. And all of the times, you know, the main issue is how is this going to affect the world? I mean, in my ending, I got the Witcher ending for Ciri. I romanced Yennefer and only Yennefer. I killed Radovid, which led to Nilfgaard taking over, which I wasn't pleased with. But it was better than the alternative, letting my friends die and letting Radovid, a madman who I actually agreed needed to be killed.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So, and also Ceres was queen of the Isles. That was immediately obvious to me. As soon as I know I had to pick between Hjalmar and Ceres, I was like, Ceres all the way. And I felt it coming. I was like, the game is going to make me pick between these two, isn't it? And sure enough, at the scene of a crime, you immediately have an option to go with Ceres and figure out who the real culprit is, which is the logical, sensible thing to do, or to go with Hjalmar and just kill the person he thinks is responsible. Like, you know, it's like, and before that, you know, just seeing their personalities, I was already like, yeah, Ceres is the one that we should pick. I mean, she'll be the first woman ruler of Skellige. Fuck yeah. And also, she's rational, and she doesn't want to start a war. So I was like,
yeah.
And Geralt becomes politically entrenched in that side quest. Also, the one in Novigrad where you assassinate Radovid. Like, he can't escape. There's, you know, Geralt mentions that he doesn't like picking the lesser evil, but sometimes there is no option. You have to pick one thing or the other, you know, and he likes to stay out of politics, but at the end of the day, is he going to sit there while a madman is on the throne who could come after him and Ciri and his loved ones?
The people that he supposedly feels indifferent about?
I think at this stage in Geralt's development, though, he's willing to admit the affection that he has for the people he does love. I do think it's really awkward whenever you get, like, the sorceresses meet up.
Yes. It is so awkward for me that I usually end up just, like, covering half my face and, like, listening to it, like...
Oh, God. Man, if I had romanced Triss, I wouldn't have had the balls to turn Yen down, man. Like, the way that like, she lifts the Jin's curse and, like, y'all lift it and then, you know, like, you could just be like, I don't feel that way anymore. Like, I couldn't be the one to break the news to her. I didn't feel like I had to bust my balls too much about letting Triss down. It was just kind of like, you know, don't, like Dijkstra, of all people, tries to bust your balls about it. But I was like, nah, man, I'm going to let her go because it's Yennefer. I mean, and that's the character. Yeah. That's the character I felt like the game was almost pushing me towards, number one and number two, because that's the character I was more familiar with from the TV series.
I mean, that makes sense. I also feel like as much as I feel like Triss loves Geralt, I feel like it's more of a platonic kind of way in my genuine. Like, it's more like a brother-sister relationship than it is a romantic one. Like, I don't truly feel like she loves Geralt the way that Geralt loves her, in a sense. Like, he, like, I just don't feel like they have that connection, whereas, like, Geralt and Yennefer, I feel like it's a true, like, I am in love with you, I can't see the rest of my life without you kind of love.
I, you know, when I played it, I kind of saw Triss as, like, you know, kind of like an old flame kind of thing. Like, yeah, we did this when I didn't have my memory or whatever, but, like, you know, like, yeah, that time has passed. Like you said, now they have a more like sibling like relationship.
Yeah, no, I mean in the modern circumstance of like the current game, like it just feels more like it's like, oh yeah, you know, we tried that and we're just kind of better off as friends.
Yeah, like that the time for that passed or whatever. Like Yennefer, I feel like is Geralt's true love. But you know, like I'm also partial to Tifa in Final Fantasy VII. I feel like that one's a lot less clear.
Yes.
But I'm pro Tifa all the way.
I'm pro Tifa. I want to cosplay her so bad, but I don't have the confidence to show off my midriff like her badass fucking self, because she is Miss fucking Queen. I love Tifa. Tifa is my bae. I love that bitch. That's my girl. That's my girl forever.
Oh, for real. Me too. But yeah, I never got your answer on that though. Did the Bloody Baron die in your playthrough, or was in your first playthrough or not?
He did in my first playthrough. I'm pretty sure. I can't fucking remember, but I think so. I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he did.
He hung himself in mine, and honestly, like, I was okay with that. I'm trying to think of some of the more difficult choices in the game. Ciri, I felt like that was pretty obvious, you know, letting her kind of be herself and also, you know, handle her own shit and also just doing better to lift her spirits and whatnot. Those options I felt like were pretty clear, especially with additional context. You know, Triss and Yennefer, I feel like it could go either way, but Yennefer to me is the canonical choice. I'm trying to think of anything else. We talked about the Skellige, Ceres versus Hjalmar.
Oh, what about Kira? Kira Metz.
Kira, yeah. So I had a little bit of a heads up on that one. I was told, you know, to pick the more positive options in order to steer her towards going. I learned that you could, the game doesn't tell you this, but I knew in advance that you could get her to come to Kaer Morhen later on. I didn't look up the exact choices. Yeah. I let them naturally flow, and I picked the ones that, based on what I had read, would lead her toward doing that. And what I knew of her. And I managed to get her to go to Kaer Morhen instead of... I think if she goes after Radovid, she actually dies.
Yes. Yeah, she does.
And then there's Letho, who was alive, because I kept everyone alive where I could, importing from The Witcher 2. And his quest line, I actually did fuck up and I reloaded in order to get the right one. Yes, because basically like the whole thing is a ruse. And so like you're tempted to throw yourself into combat and you actually ruin his plan if you do that. So I reloaded my save and yeah, I think we covered most of the big major story decisions. Like I said, I mean, the quests in the game are peppered with them. And it's easy to get lost in this world and just do quest after quest after quest. I tried to mostly do them in order by level, but even at the end of the day, I found myself a few levels over. And that started to cause issues where quests would be too under level by the time I got to them. Because, like, you know, there are some quests in Skellige that, you know, I'm not going to go sail all the way to Skellige right now when I'm in the middle of Novigrad. So I don't know if maybe there was a better way to go about that. And I should have cut off once I achieved, you know, the main quest objectives of Novigrad, then it's time to move on to Skellige or something. I feel like somewhere around there is where I really started to feel it. Because, like, towards the end of Velen, I knew I was a couple levels over. And that's ideal. That's okay. But, like, by the end of the game, I was approaching, like, 10 levels over the recommended quest level. So it started to become too easy for me. I've heard that the Death March difficulty is much, much more difficult. And also enemy upscaling can turn even, like, trivial encounters in the original game into difficulty.
That is something that I will say that I have done. I haven't done it as much recently just because I haven't been gaming as much. You know, I've been gaming for the podcast and things like that, but we just really haven't been dedicating too much time to gaming. I've been trying to take off my screen time because I spend so much time on a screen all day. But I used to do this, and I don't know if this is a smart choice, but this is something that I learned. Shout out Jordan. You know who you are. He told me that he started out every game on the highest difficulty, and he would only knock down the difficulty if he was like died 6, 7, 8 times and could not get past part. But he would always start a game on the highest level of difficulty that you can possibly do in a game. So you automatically know what it's like to have the hardest experience and then work your way down.
Yeah. I started on standard because that's usually what I pick, but that's not a bad idea. At the same time, though, I know sometimes like I'm not trying to spend a lot of time on a game. I'm trying to get through it as efficiently as possible for the podcast. I mean, God knows. I mean, I poured hundreds of hours into this game, so. And I'm glad that I did. I'm going to look it up right now because 138 hours so far. And I've completed the main quest, every available side quest, every side quest that I've triggered so far. There might be some more in the world, some extra like low level ones. But like, yeah, just about every side quest I've completed. There's a couple more Witcher contracts that I've triggered that I haven't completed. And then there's like the DLC stuff. So there's still a lot more to do. And plus the litters of question marks across the map that, you know, I've had to just make notes of and be like, okay, yeah, I'll fast travel here later and check that out. But right now I'm too high level as it is.
Yeah. I feel like that's something that's so difficult for me. And I feel like you and I both kind of are on the same vein in that because we're both such completionists.
Yeah.
That we have to like discover everything and do every single little thing before we even get anywhere close. Like if I'm playing a game where it's kind of got like a linear, and I feel like that's another reason why I like Zelda. I feel like it was a little bit hard for me to finish because like you can kind of go any which direction. But if I'm in a game that's more linear, I'm going to get my first couple, you know, main quests out of the way as you do naturally your prologue sequence. I'm going to get to a point where I can explore. I'm going to do every fucking side quest up until it is too hard for me, then I do the next story portion and rinse and repeat until I'm done. I don't know why I'm like this. I just do this every time.
I find open world RPGs are good because they give you a good system. So I do quests as they pertain to my current level. So if I am at or above the recommended level for that quest, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to prioritize doing quests based on their level order so that that way I don't lose out on experience, right? So I have a system, but that system is also constrained by location. I'm going to tackle quests in a way that makes sense, because even with a fast travel system, I want it to make sense at least somewhat lore-wise, and Geralt's just constantly skipping between Skellige, Velen, and Novigrad just don't feel right to me. I feel like, you know, it makes sense to complete... Right, exactly. Like, how the fuck did Roach get to Skellige? One of the greatest mysteries. And canonically, he does, because there's horse races on Skellige.
Yeah.
So,
and Roach wins every time, because he's a bad little fucking baby.
But, yeah, it... I try to complete things also by location. So I didn't even grind. I leveled naturally, organically in the game, and it's the way that the game handles that beautifully. I think, like you said, I think that the better thing to do would have been to start with the harder difficulty and work my way down. Maybe not the hardest difficulty, because I know that there are some experiences that are intended for second playthroughs, but start with the one, like, if I'm playing like an action RPG, I've played a lot of those. I can probably start on the next tier up. That's what I tried to do with Jedi Fallen Order. I started on Jedi Master, and then I worked my way. I went down to Knight because I felt like I was like, yeah, you know, I play action
comfortable
games. Yeah,
I can do this. And then you get to that fucking, what's it called, that force thing where you have to like do that like 3 minute long, like, jump through where you're using, what's her name's, like, plasma, and you're having to jump through, and it's, like, all out in dead space. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but it's, like, the hardest fucking sequence.
I went to Dathomir early, so Dathomir was what forced me to downgrade my difficulty setting, but,
Fuck Dathomir! Why do we have to, every time we bring up Jedi, we just have to say, fuck Dathomir.
For real. with Witcher, though, there is an option for enemy upscaling, so that might be an option to pursue, but I think not for a first playthrough, because I heard that it'll turn, like, sometimes even, like, joke encounters, like the fight, with the scripted fight with Dandelion, into difficult battles, you know?
Oh, shit.
You know, because it's kind of just applied automatically. So, yeah, but enemy upscaling, I've heard, increases the difficulty and the Death March difficulty setting. With Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, they had an option to turn on the dynamic leveling from the beginning, so I'm actually doing that. So that game has the upscaling applied. I feel like that game was better optimized for that, since it offers the option so accessibly to me. But on my New Game Plus Witcher 3 file, I'm excited. I'm going to hop it up to Death March. I'm going to do the highest difficulty. I'm going to turn on the enemy upscaling, you know, and then I'm just going to have a blast going through the world again with all my shit.
With all my shit. I feel like that's, and that's something that I do whenever I'm playing games on my own. I kind of agree with you. That's not something that I feel like I would do as much for the podcast, just because, like, you know, we're trying to make sure that we, you know, make content and we're not just leaving you guys. Wow, that was hard for my brain. make sure that we're not just leaving you guys, like, barren out in the desert with no fucking content. But also, you know, just making sure that we're able to get things out in a reasonable amount of time. I mean, we do this almost year-round, but we don't want to be doing this constantly. You know, we do need a break from each other. I know Ash loves me, but he's got to get rid of me sometimes. Fine.
I think it works with the rotating schedule right now. You know,
you guys
jump onto whichever games that, you're going to be a little more passionate about or more interested in, but I encourage you to challenge yourself and try something, you haven't before, like with Fable, right?
Yeah, I did Fable. Yeah.
That's what I'm doing with all y'all's games. You know, like The Witcher 3, you know, this was a game that definitely was on my list. I just needed an excuse to play it, and I'm glad that I did. With that, I think we can go into final thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, starting with you, Megan.
Oh, man. Well, for one, I'm so glad that I picked this game because I'm glad that you seem to have really enjoyed it. I'm really glad that we finally got the space to give this game the justice that I feel like we could give it as much as we could give. I mean, I feel like this is a game that you can definitely talk about for hours. I'm sure there is podcasts and stuff out there just going through all of this content. And I love that there is so much content and lore and things about this specific, I'm not even going to say game, because it really is a universe, and if you do want the full experience, I feel like reading the books and watching the series and playing the game, it's all kind of coinciding, because you really do get, like, different inflections of the people that you kind of see in the game. Yeah, I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. I did kind of wait it out a little bit, and I'm glad that I waited it out. Y'all, if you haven't played The Witcher, they are remaking it. I believe they're plotting that baby boy right into Unreal Engine 5, so you'll be able to play it again soon if you don't feel like playing the current version, which the current version itself is fucking beautiful.
Is that an official project or a fan project?
Yeah. No, I do believe. Let me look that up for it. Let me as one would say, meta style. Let me fact check myself.
I think I heard that CD Projekt Red was doing a remake of the first Witcher game.
Yes. One of the most acclaimed RPGs of all time, now ready for a new generation.
Okay, so that's what's coming out on Unreal Engine 5, is the Witcher 1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looks like they are, I believe so. Let me see. Remake, yeah. Next gen update review. Oh boy, here I go witchering again. There are now even more options to melt your GPU and give you amazing screenshots and on consoles. The smoke you see is actually coming from my GPU. I love this guy. Jump dash roll, shouting you out, bro. That's I just read a little bit of your review and I'm obsessed. I'm gonna need to read more of your shit because that was fucking hilarious. Devs are not afraid to remove. Yeah, so it's still in production right now.
The Witcher 1 remake, right?
It says The Witcher remake.
Yeah, so that's The Witcher 1, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which I think they're going to end up going into all three, kind of like they're going to do, like, I think they're going to do in sequential order. Because they did do number 3, but I mean, well, obviously we won't have, I don't know if you heard about this, we're not going to have fucking Xboxes anymore soon, so I guess that's all going to be on PC, but eventually yeah. We'll have, like, I believe all three.
I heard about that. I guess, well, it makes sense because, I mean, you can already tell that Microsoft was kind of collating the PC and the Xbox. And, you know, you might as well just get a PC, you know what I mean? And have the whole experience, I guess, because, you know, all the games that you can play on Xbox, you can play on PC. But,
right.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, at some point, I'm sure they will remake this game, but it'll probably be years down the line. I mean, they still got to do that Witcher 1 remake. We're still got the Witcher 4 due, and then they would have to do the Witcher 2 remake. We'd probably see Witcher 5 before we saw Witcher 3 remake. And, I mean, this game just got 100%. Ported to next-gen consoles and runs great as of a couple years ago.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So I'm playing this in 2024. Like I said, I can tell it's a game that released 9 years ago, but it's really pushing the limits of the technology. And, you know, with you know, the graphics upscale and whatnots and a lot of quality of life improvements, quick sign casting. God, I didn't activate that until very near the end of the game, I think, before I found out there was a quick sign casting, which just changed my world. You can now hold down R2 and just hit the face buttons in order to cast signs instead of having to only be able to cast the one that you've manually selected.
Was quick sign casting for you as stims were to me in Jedi?
I don't know.
Is this my Roman Empire?
But it's not like the game advertised it or anything, okay? I'm going to give you a hard time for the stims because I think the game does say something about it, but The Witcher 3 says absolutely nothing about there being an update since the game was released that adds quick sign casting, which you have to manually change to. I mean, they were nice enough to give us the alternative movement system right off the bat by default, but...
Yeah, no, I'm so shocked you didn't know about that. Yeah, you guys play with more than two stims?
Golly.
Like, oh yeah, how many did y'all get? I'm like, y'all got more than two? What the fuck?
I know, you found out, like, right then. But, yeah, that was like that for me, at least, in terms of, like, oh, okay, so this was an option the whole time. And it is kind of game-changing. If you weren't a sign user before... Quick sign casting.
I
saw a lot of people commenting about that because I looked it up after I saw the setting, of course, and I was like, is this something I should turn on? You know, and for me, I was a sign user, and this made it so much more utilitarian. You learn the face buttons pretty quickly, and so it becomes fast, and you can just cast all kinds of signs. So, yeah. Anyway, final thoughts. Yeah, man, I am... bewildered that it took me so long to play this game, to get into this franchise, because this is phenomenal. From what I understand, this took the linear gameplay of Witcher 1 and 2 and blended it seamlessly into an open world, and it did it beautifully. This game appeals to fans of the original games, of the book series, and is also a fantastic starting point for fans of The Witcher, as it was for me. I would recommend this to just about any serious gamer. This is a game that you really have to play. I'm not surprised at all that it won Game of the Year 2015. We said that we would look that up and get back to you on that, so I found a way to do it. I'm not surprised at all that it won the Game Awards. And I think it absolutely would continue to do that based on content alone. Yeah, there are some bugs, but you have to understand the sheer scope of the fucking game. It is massive. And it's why games like it and Skyrim are still riddled with bugs years and re-releases later, right? It's like you have to understand the absolute achievement that is a massive open world like this, which was at the time one of the biggest open world maps ever, even though it's divided into different sections. And I feel some people might have liked it better were it just one interconnected world instead. It's like these specific regions around the map, but each one of them is so massive. I think the Velen Novigrad region, like, rivals, and the Skellige region as well, rival actual open world game maps on their own.
Yeah, each region, it's like it's own game, which is wild.
It is wild. I mean, even the way that the soundtrack changes. I mean, we really didn't even touch on the music, but man, the tracks in this game are fucking bangers.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. And the show, too. Toss a coin to your fucking Witcher, bro.
Coin to your Witcher.
Valley of Plunder. You like my creed in there in the end?
I love that. That's awesome. You gotta have a little bit of that creed in there.
The amount of times that I will do a creedism to a song is ridiculous. I will creed Taylor Swift, bro. I'll be like, best believe I'm still over told. I can't help myself.
I think I found myself doing that to a couple songs. Yeah. The creed songs are fun.
That's the millennial.
Creedify. It's a millennial thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to.
When arms wide open.
Yeah, you just... Alan and I do it all the time. Like, this is marriage. Creedism.
But, yeah, I feel like we've said almost everything that we could say about The Witcher 3. I mean, well, honestly, that isn't true. There's probably so much more because this game is so fucking deep. I mean, like I said, there were fucking side quests that made me just kind of sit and think for a minute. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
This game makes you question your own humanity, too, for sure.
But, yeah,
fine.
Go check it out.
Everything's fine.
This is available on all modern platforms, I believe, including Switch.
It is available on the Switch.
That is a technological
marvel. It's a great airplane. Just play it on the airplane. It's fine. Use your Switch on the airplane and play The Witcher.
I know it's a 9-year-old game, but, like, the sheer like massiveness of the map. But then Skyrim was pretty big too. But I believe this game map
was
quite a bit bigger than Skyrim's.
Yeah, oh yeah. Absolutely. It's fucking massive. It's huge. Like you it's bigger. Yeah. It's a big boy.
Rest assured, I have not played through the DLC quest lines yet, and I would like to. So this is a to be continued. I would love to do another episode, either as an official part three or as a bonus round segment, talking about just the DLC of this game, because I have heard that it's phenomenal.
Oh, damn. I just looked it up. The Witcher's map is twice the size of Skyrim's. Broham. What?
That sounds about what I was thinking, because I think I'd read that somewhere.
Listen,
before.
If you love Skyrim and you love politics, you're gonna love The Witcher.
Amazing. You're gonna love
that.
It.
Please click that. You're gonna love The Witcher.
Well, all right, y'all. Stay tuned for our anniversary special part two on Fable 2. As well as our game lunch review on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth with Andrew Orozco from Geek News Now. That's probably going to be the next thing. And then the Fable 2 review. What we have planned for this month is Nightfire Part 1 and Part 2, which was Zach's pick. And then in April, we'll be getting into our 420 month. So... our bad games of the month that we're reviewing, as we do in April, are going to be E.T. the Extraterrestrial, the Atari game that is so infamous, and also...
That it was wiped off the face of the planet, yeah.
Yeah, and also Plumbers Don't Wear Ties, probably not in that order. And then our 420 special, I think Bo wants to do Pepsi Man, of all things, and honestly... I'm inclined to just go with it. So
yeah,
I think that's what we've got planned for April. Yeah, so stay tuned for all of that and more. We're actually kind of getting towards the final stretch of our season, so we'll be thinking up ideas for Season 7 very soon, and we can't wait to get into it.
Yes, absolutely. Also, I wanted to shout somebody out that we have been in his podcast reviews a couple years now. Daniel, who is on our Collateral Media page. That man made me cry like a baby back bitch because he is so nice and kind that I wanted to shout him out. So he said, you know, like that he really enjoys listening to our podcast, and his review made my heart so happy, and it made me just like so excited to like keep recording episodes. Like, and not that I'm like, oh, I'm getting tired of it or anything. It gave me like, it bolstered my resolve. Like, I just wanted to keep going. Like, it just gave me so much encouragement, and I was just like, I needed to shout him out. Thank you, sir, for your kind words, and you're so sweet, and we at Collateral love you so fucking much. Like, we're so glad to be in your top five. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much, Daniel. I saw his review and his podcast rotation ranking last year, where he also ranked us at number four and ranked Collateral Cinema on both lists as well. And then I saw that he'd even reviewed us before then, and I was like, wow, okay. So, yeah, man, thank you so much for the heartfelt words. Yet again, another pleasant surprise, as it was for me last year. Before that, I wasn't even aware. And that's honestly, like, that's the reason why we do this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how people perceive our content. I just don't know. I put it out there. I rarely ever listen to it again.
Yeah, no, like, I'm like, what did I even say during that podcast? Like, I know I talked about things, but I just kind of, like, it's like a stream of consciousness, and then I don't really know what happens afterwards. It's like a trance I put myself into. I don't fucking know. But he was like, you know, it feels like I'm just hanging out with him in the room, and I was like, oh, my God, he's sweet. Wrap this man in a blanket and give him some chalky milk immediately.
Yeah, that was awesome. And if you'd like to offer feedback yourself, feel free to on Apple Podcasts. You can leave us a 5-star review. You can follow us on Good Pods and help us move up the ranks there as well. Or feedback on your platform of choice. Interact with us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course, you can listen to Collateral Gaming wherever you get your podcasts. Very soon, I think I will be contributing to the Collateral Let's Play content that Bo has been doing. Maybe just giving people kind of a peek into whatever games that we're playing that month. More than likely going to mostly focus on, you know, whatever it is that we're currently playing for our scheduled episode, but might branch out here and there. But yeah, if I could find a way to easily stream or record those from the PlayStation 5, then it's on. And then, of course, eventually get a capture card, get back to recording patron commentaries. So we do have Let's Play commentaries available as well, full games. Those are on our Patreon, and if you donate money, you get access to those whenever possible. At some point, I'd love to get back onto that and upload some more. On Collateral Cinema, we released our review on The Wraith, and then we should be recording our Miiiversary special on Happiness of the Katakuris. And we also will be releasing our episode on Lost Highway, which we've already recorded at the time of recording this. It's St. Patrick's Day, by the way. Megan, are you wearing green?
As of this present moment, I am not. I had a green hair clip in my hair earlier, but I put it in a pony. So go ahead and pinch me, pals. I am a little bit Irish, and I am not wearing any green. Ruh-roh. But I am wearing plaid, so I don't know if that...
I'm wearing my my green, my stereotypical gamer green Hylian Crest Zelda shirt.
Actually, so. My blanket has green on it, so it counts because I'm wearing it on my lap.
And also, I outfitted Geralt in the Griffin armor. I have the Superior Griffin set at the moment, and that's what I completed the in-game with. And that's all green, so... Geralt was also rocking it for St. Patrick's Day. Thanks, Geralt.
Okay. Love that. He's a patriotic man. He's a patriotic, little pessimistic little shit. You patriotic politic, you.
But yeah, check out Collateral Cinema as well. So I guess that's it.
I think that's it, pal.
I think that's it.
That's it.
I don't really think we have... anything else to bullshit about now, so.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. That's all, folks. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, with that being said, I've been Ashley Chancellor.
And I've been Megan Gomez. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys.
This has been Collateral Gaming. We are out. Collateral Gaming is a Collateral Media podcast. All music and game clips are owned by their respective creators and are used for educational purposes only. Please don't sue us. We're poor. And yes.